This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Richard Ferrer, and in this week's show, I'm joined by an expert panel to analyse the shocking events of last Shabbat at Congregation Beth Israel in Texas, where a British man walked into a shul and held the rabbi and three congregants hostage. The hostages escaped after an 11-hour ordeal at gunpoint before the FBI shot dead the hostage taker, 44-year-old Malik Faisal Akram from Blackburn. It was the latest in a list of synagogue attacks in recent years. In October 2019, it was a shul in Halle, Germany. In April 2019, a shul in Poway, California. In October 2018, a shul in Pittsburgh, now Colleyville, Texas. Four attacks on four synagogues in less than 4 years. It is important to state that those previous three attacks were conducted by white supremacists, not Islamic anti-Semitism, which appears to be the clear motivation for the Texas attack. Joining me to discuss this subject and its implications for the Jewish community here in the UK, I am delighted to welcome two very familiar voices on the Jewish News Podcast, the Community Security Trust's Chief Executive Mark Gardner and the Chief Executive of JW3 Raymond Simonson. And from the United States, making his long overdue JN podcast debut, Imam Abdullah Antepli, a university professor and founder and co-director of the Muslim Leadership Initiative. Welcome to you all. So I think it's sensible to start with you, Mark. Our listeners we're all understandably concerned about the implications for our own safety as members of the Jewish community. The facts seem established, but could you give us a sense of the shul attack from the CST's perspective and maybe answer the question that we're all asking today, how safe are we?
Look, from every one of these attacks, and unfortunately they keep on happening, we take as many learning lessons as possible. Actually, by complete coincidence, I had a one-hour Zoom call with the head of the CST equivalent in the States on Thursday, and we were discussing how much they've increased their work over the last year or two and what advice we could give towards that end. And then when this occurs, suddenly you're pitched back into the reality of that. The learning from this so far, it looks like the fellow either talked his way in or was literally invited in because people wanted to be hospitable to him, which I completely understand. What other learning? Right, so you don't let someone in if you don't know who they are. Next seems to be the way that the people managed to escape. They appear to manage to have edged their way towards the exit. And then when they felt that they had no other alternative, a chair was thrown at the gunman and they made a run for it. You know, we talk about run away or hide. Tell people what's happening. Maybe there's another one that we should add, which is fight. And fight is there as a last option. And I know that my counterparts around the world have discussed many times whether or not to encourage communities to fight back when something like this happens. And oddly enough, it's what happens in Israel quite a lot. When there's a terrorist attack occurs, people in the vicinity of the terrorist quite often fight back. I'm not going to start advocating that in the UK, but it's certainly something that should be considered as a last resort when you end up in this situation. Usually we take calls from non-Jewish media saying, oh, are you increasing security? Are you increasing security? Because what? And I hate discussing security levels. But the fact is, as anyone who leads any sort of Jewish life knows, we have a huge amount of security across the Jewish community because our assumption, whether it's at CST or at, you know, as the leader of an organization like JW3, like Raymond is, yourself, Richard, at Jewish News, we know that these things do happen. And therefore, we have the security in place. And whatever resources we've got are employed day in, day out, because it can happen anywhere, at any time, and for any reason. I mean, who knew there was a shul in Colleyville, Texas? If you'd gone to American Jewish community leaders and you'd asked them, which shul do you think is likely to be attacked this Shabbat? Has anybody mentioned Colleyville? I doubt it very much. So a huge learning point is one that we know already, but it reinforces it. It can happen anywhere, and therefore everyone, unfortunately, needs to take their security seriously.
Yeah. I'm keen to throw over to our other two guests, but just before I do, Mark, the rabbi relied on training that he had received to get him and the three congregants out of the building. Was the training that he received in the States similar to that you provide community leaders and volunteers here in the UK? Is there a security connection between the CST and the Jewish community in the States?
There is a growing awareness of the need for security in the States. There's an awful lot of American Jewish organizations that are already active in the anti-Semitism space. And there's also quite a lot of them involved now in the security space. And essentially what's been happening over the last couple of years is that memoranda of understanding have been drawn up, and people have been just working out how they do that and how you do it to scale across America. So there has been an increasing amount of training. There is an increasing amount of security at sites, and this will accelerate that process further.
Okay. Imam Abdullah, thank you for joining us. I was just saying off air before we started that the series of tweets that went viral from you in the hours after the attack, I thought was some of the most positive reactions to a horrific situation. It'd be useful to give listeners a flavour. You wrote that now the hostages have been rescued, we, the North American Muslims, need to have the morality required through conversations about those Zionists are our enemy. Conversations that you must have been privy to within the Muslim community, I guess. You also say we need to honestly discuss the increasing anti-Semitism within various Muslim communities. Obviously, the response to that was varied, to say the least. Can you talk us through the responses to those posts and what it tells us about the current state of Muslim-Jewish relations?
Thank you very
after
much.
Saturday's attack.
And pleasure to be here. Before answering your question, I would like to extend my deepest and most sincere condolences to the Jewish community in UK and around the world. I am still pretty shaken by the heinous anti-Semitic terror attack in Texas. And it's not an episodic one-time incident, as you have already listed. This is in line of many, many horrific anti-Semitic attacks happening in the United States and elsewhere, should be condemned with the strongest and the clearest words possible. This is a call for moral action by everyone. So my deepest sympathies to everybody there. It particularly pains me. We have hosted Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks not too long ago here at Duke University and shared our dreams, may his memory be a blessing, of Jews and Muslims modeling and exemplifying different kind of discourse and relationship both in UK as well as in the United States. This is a step to those dreams and aspiration, but inshallah, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will get there. One maybe lesson, if I can add to Mark, is as you have said, both these anti-Semitic terrorist incident by this UK citizen and also the previous ones shows that, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, none of these anti-Semitic incidents are connected to organized terrorist or groups. These hateful, violent people, both in this case in Texas and elsewhere, are a product of increasingly poisonous, toxic, anti-Semitic discourse that is becoming mainstream in certain Western communities, including Muslim American communities. I have been ringing the alarms and flagging this for a very long time. There are so many irresponsible faith leaders, politicians, activists, community leaders who are so irresponsibly and quite honestly non-representatively. It's not broadly shared by everyone, but seemingly the collective immune system is weakened that these horrific racist anti-Semitic discourse is going unchallenged. It is becoming louder, clearer, and unfortunately it's becoming mainstreamed over and over again, hence the intense anger and frustration in those tweets. The response has been overwhelmingly welcoming, a breath of fresh air, because I stand on a moral credibility. I am not saying what I just said on those tweets after the attack. I have been saying this all along. Just look at some of the podcasts that I have done about 3 weeks ago, calling out American Muslims for Palestine, Council of American Islamic Relations, CARE, a recent reprehensible, really disgusting anti-Semitic display in their convention, in their report, calling all the polite Zionists or any Jew or anyone who has any sympathy and solidarity or connection to Israel and Zionism is declared as enemy of the Islam. So what I'm hoping as a result of these conversations, the lessons to be learned is, Rumi has a beautiful saying. He says, I am pointing out the sun and the fools are getting lost on my finger, on the pointer. There is so much useless discourse, wasting time and energy discussing the murderers, in this case, this British citizen, British Muslim guy. We are discussing this, who did it, why did it, etc. We have to go beyond this chit-chat and useless, not very productive chit-chat, and go after the real enemy here is anti-Semitic discourse. Anti-Semitism is on the rise. All the wonderful progress that we have done since Holocaust, where we were able to put enough healthy, ethical, moral pressure on anti-Semitism in the West, defeating them in religious front, secular front, at least marginalizing, those pressures, external pressure that we are putting on hate is not holding anymore. Clearly, the anti-Semitism is coming back. It is resurrecting its ugly face in this way and another. These incidents, as horrific as they are, as shaken as I am personally about this particular incident, it's a window into much larger ugly reality that our immune system is no longer able to hold or resist or push back. The growing anti-Semitism, which has many facets, which I'm looking forward to discuss further. Some of it is good, terrible anti-Semitism coming from various Christian teachings of the past. Some of it is a further popularization of the protocols of the Elders of Zion. And much of it is unfortunately blended into the complex realities of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and how it is spilling over to the world and directly or indirectly shaping anti-Semitic discourses around the world. So we have to really up in the arms, if anybody is concerned. The last thing I will say, Richard, sorry if I'm getting into my angry preaching mode, is it is reprehensible and rather incredibly hypocritical for any community members to call out the anti-Semitism or the hate in other people's community. Moral cleaning starts at home. If you are doing nothing about cleaning your own home from the filth of anti-Semitism or hate, you have no moral ground to talk about the hate and racism and bigotry in other communities. So I am at least trying to fulfill my moral obligation, moral imperative, ethical commitment that we Muslims, because of our relationship with the Palestinian suffering, because of the way we are in solidarity with the Palestinian community, I think we have more moral responsibility to be a lot more diligent, to make sure our social justice concerns, our human rights concerns about what our Palestinian brothers are facing in the Middle East will not allow the reprehensible anti-Semitism entering into our collective communal spaces, as we have seen in this previous reports of American Muslims for Palestine, or CARE. So the responses are mixed. I am getting a lot of private love and support from UK, from United States. Part of why I'm not getting a lot of public support from the Muslim community is another indication why these loud, hateful, racist, and anti-Semitic voices with the Muslim community is in recent decades or years became more powerful. They are bullying the Muslim community in the name of Palestinian and pro-Palestinian activism and silencing the moderate majority. And this is unacceptable, and enough is enough.
I think we should dig deeper into that subject of social justice bleeding into racism and what you perceive as a lack of support from the Muslim community. I think that's the crux. But I do want to get Raymond in on the conversation. Thank you for your patience. As someone who runs one of the most open, public-facing Jewish community organizations in the country, you will know more than most about the financial and indeed the emotional cost of keeping your visitors safe. Can you just give me a sense of how the Texas attack has affected JW3 this week?
Yeah, but thank you for inviting me on, and a huge thank you, Shukran, to the Imam for being an ally of the community and for his wise words and leadership. Look, as I often say to people, you know, JW3 has this reputation for being just about the most open, accessible, high-profile Jewish centre, Jewish building in the country, with a huge sign above it, very unlike any other Jewish building that's ever been in this country, a huge sign that says, "This is a Jewish space." That's not something that we could do if it weren't for Mark and his colleagues and CST and all the security experts we have in the community. Because when this idea first came up, you know, you could imagine we almost gave everyone at CST a heart attack when we said we want to run a building that might have, at the time we thought maybe 1,000 people a week. It grew to be sort of 4,500 people a week coming through our doors, and we don't want them to have to press a buzzer on a closed gate. We don't want a faceless voice to say who they are. We don't want them to show their identity at the door. We want to be warm and welcoming and open. And here's the reasons why. And we explained about the values and all the reasons. But we also understood, and I've worked entirely in the Jewish community, 30 years in community spaces, and I've had all of the drills you can imagine. And I've been evacuated and invacuated, and I've been in lockdown, and I've had anti-Semitic threats made to me, and I've had to have private security at my home because of the far right. I get security, I take it seriously. And with all of that in mind, we said we've got to be able to do both. We cannot live as a community in a fortress because I want to make this, I hope it's not too odd an analogy, with COVID, right? There was a phase we were all in lockdown. And there was a point where we said we have to be able to live our lives. There's a virus out there that can kill, and anti-Semitism is a virus that can kill. We know that. And actually, we can either be permanently in lockdown, never hug our loved ones, always wear a mask, or we can find the ways to mitigate. We can have vaccinations. We can use our hand gel. We can have social distance. And that's what I think of as how we react to anti-Semitism. We use the experts. In this case, we don't need Professor Witty. We need Mark and Dave Rich and all the brilliant staff and volunteers at CST. And we have our own private security company who work hand in hand with them. And we deal regularly with counter-terrorism colleagues. And we have a fantastic relationship with the Met police. And I can't praise them highly enough, the local police around this area, who are always around and about. And we put all of this in place. And here's the crazy thing that British non-Jews can't get their heads around. And when I spoke on the radio just yesterterday on BBC 5 Live, and like Nihal, the presenter, trying to get his head around the fact that a place that essentially runs a nursery and a cinema and a restaurant and kids' activities and theatre and music, like it's not, you know, we're not politicians. I'm not the Israeli ambassador. We're not the Queen. We're a bunch of youth and community workers and arts and culture professionals doing fun stuff for families and kids, running a food bank, like doing that stuff. Anywhere else in the country without the word Jewish on it, you don't need any security. And maybe you have one person. And we have to have £500,000 worth of security. Just stop and think about that for a minute. 20 to 25% of the money we have to fundraise has to be spent on security. If we didn't do that, we wouldn't be able to run this place in a way that everybody can feel safe.
If I could just develop that thought, Raymond. I've obviously had the pleasure of walking countless times past your charming security guards and security gates, CCTV cameras, often with non-Jews who are just shocked that this is what it takes to operate as an identifiable Jewish space. But isn't there something psychologically damaging about the fact that we don't even blink an eye any longer, that this is what it takes to be Jewish?
You're so right. And I was with, I remember being with a couple of non-Jewish friends a couple of years ago, and we were in, we stopped to pick up some stuff. I needed to pick up some kosher stuff, and we stopped by one of the kosher stores, and they couldn't believe there had to be a security person outside, and they saw a couple of people, actually it was a couple of CST people in there with their, you know, jackets saying CST, walk in the streets. A range of shops that were selling, you know, kosher food and bakeries and things like that. Like, it was so complete, and they couldn't believe that I didn't blink at that, because I'm so used to it, because I've grown up in Jewish community in my life. And even from when I was a 13-year-old, you know, young madrich, a young youth leader, voluntary youth leader in Redbridge, amongst the training you do, you get trained in how to work with children and how to do first aid and how to run games and songs. And then you do the training on what happens when the terrorist breaks into the community centre. Like, we're a bunch of 13-year-old young youth leaders, and we have to be trained in how to do evacuation, So you're someone like me who spent his entire life in the community. I don't say I take it for granted, but I almost don't notice it. But anyone else looking in gets shocked by it. And in fact, we had, I remember a few years ago at the Jewish Comedy Festival that we created and we run, one of the judges on the Jewish Comedian of the Year was a non-Jewish Scottish comedian and critic. I'm going to name her Katie Copstick, who spoke in a blog or on a podcast or whatever it was afterwards, and wrote in this blog some really vile anti-Semitic stuff about us, mocking the fact that we have this fortress and mocking the fact that we think we're so special, so therefore we have security. And like, she didn't see it as, oh my God, that's terrible that the British Jews have to have this. She saw it as a chance to attack us for thinking that we were kind of some kind of, you know, we have this exceptionalism and oh God, the Holocaust, what do they think? And she said, when was the last time a Jew got shot in the street? It was like an outrageous thing, and that's a mainstream, you know, critic and writer who was mocking the fact that we have this. And like we all know, if there weren't security outside the Jewish schools and the Jewish nurseries and the Jewish communities and the Jewish synagogues, we would be in our equivalent of lockdown. We would not be able to live the lives we need. And people like me, I spend my entire waking days trying to create strong, positive, vibrant Jewish experiences, strengthening Jewish identity and Jewish pride, working on interfaith, all of those things. We cannot do that. You cannot live an out, proud, loud Jewish life if you don't have that balanced with security. What we don't want to do is say, we're too scared, we're hiding under the table, and we're not coming out. We're going to be out there dancing on the tabletops, screaming our Jewishness, but knowing that standing behind us, watching our backs, are CST and security people. And that is the dual part of British Jewish life.
Yep. Absolutely. Shout that loud and proud. Mark, I'd like to return to what Abdullah was saying and his immense frustration from the lack of mainstream Muslim voices willing to put the head above the parapet and speak in the sort of positive, temperate terms that Abdullah spoke about on Twitter after the event. Is it your fear that when it comes to the Muslim community, and I imagine this is obviously a question I should probably ask Abdullah, that how do you put it, the loonies still have the loudest voices, and where does progressive Islam get a foothold in this country?
I don't think it's for me to answer where progressive Islam gets a foothold in this country. I wouldn't claim to know the Muslim community well enough. And first of all, it's Muslim communities, plural. Secondly, from CSC's perspective, on the one hand, we're concerned about those who are absolutely not progressives, so that's where our expertise lies. But also, we have a terrific program called SAFE, which stands for Security Advice for Everyone, whereby all those lessons that the Jewish community has learned through hard experience is shared with other faith communities, and, you know, probably the most prominent being Muslim communities around the country. So we have three members of staff who pre-COVID would travel around the country and now are doing it online, where we're saying, look, this is what we do as a Jewish community. This is why we do it. We think that you as faith leaders, we think that you should consider it. We're not telling you what you should do, but here's what we do. And if we can help you to do it, then we're here to work with you. Because mosques face a far-right terrorist threat, as do synagogues. And that is a very practical way of building bridges. And actually, it flushes out the anti-Semites, because there are some people who just won't admit Jews into their space, be it physical or online, who just won't discuss these things with us. But we see it as a very practical means of building relations with mosques and other Muslim community groups across the country. And it's been very, very successful. It's a shame we're not on telly, because Raymond and I are just sat here nodding away at everything that Imam Abdullah said, you know. And it's so refreshing for me, because I've got to be honest, the last couple of days I've got myself very, very annoyed at what I perceive to be an absolute absence of any leading British Muslim voices speaking out against what happened and addressing head on the Jew hatred in the way that Imam Abdullah has done. Now, don't get me wrong, we do have some really good allies within the broad Muslim community, with people that CSD has worked with for a very long time, and we're very proud to stand with them in the trench against racism, whether it's anti-Muslim racism or anti-Jewish racism. But, you know, when you look more broadly, there is no introspection. And when I listen to the unbelievable audio of the attacker in the synagogue in Texas, I hear what happened opposite JW3, Raymond's building, on Finchley Road in May 2021, when a convoy of cars from those same northern towns drove through our Jewish neighborhoods yelling absolutely vile abuse. And the one opposite Raymond's building, JW3, was only the one that was caught on camera. This was happening all over Britain, where, you know, Jewish neighborhoods from Glasgow to Bournemouth, literally, I got called twice on the one morning, because it had happened in Glasgow and then it happened in Bournemouth within 20 minutes of each other, two opposite ends of the country. Not exactly well known for having huge Jewish communities, but local people knew where to drive their cars with their Palestinian flags and to shout their abuse. North Manchester, all manner of horrendous anti-Semitic incidents from cars being driven at speed through Jewish areas there. And I just, you know, for all this that we've heard about mental health and Al-Qaeda and all the rest of it, at the end of the day, it's what Imam Abdullah said. Just the levels of anti-Semitism and the levels of conspiracy theory within British Muslim communities and Muslim communities elsewhere around the world, just absolutely preposterous. It's bad for Jews, and I would suggest it's really, really bad for Muslims as well.
Abdullah's got us all nodding away. Absolutely. Here. So look, get us nodding some more. Could sure. You elaborate, as you were talking moments ago, on the frustrations you face?
As we talk, I just want to repeat and register my incredible pain about the emotional cost and token that you just mentioned, Richard. Like, what would it be for a 7-8-year-old Jewish girl or a boy to think that because of her or his identity, in order to be able to go and pray and be part of a community, he or she has to get into a fortress back and forth. This pains me tremendously. And in some parts of the world, like the country I grew up in, Turkey, it was the case, and to a certain extent understandable. But the fact that Europe and North America is also becoming like that, 20-30% of the budget is spent on security, this incredibly pains me. I cannot express the depth of my moral panic as a result of this. Secondly, Richard, there are really no quick answers to these complicated questions. And some of the labels that you have used in your question is not always very helpful. Lunatics are not in charge of the Muslim community. They may be the most loud ones. And the progressive Islam is not the magical pill that will solve our problem. Much of the vile anti-Semitism in the United States is coming from progressive Muslims. People who are consider themselves, put the label of progressive Islam or progressive Muslims in the far left, etc. So we really have to break it down to make sure we identify the problem well, we understand its complexity. Regretfully, but what is there undeniably is this silent majority who is in deafening silence with no moral outrage and with no visible articulation of their moral commitment to root out and filter out hate and anti-Semitism within the Muslim community. And there are so many answers to this. One main answer is, regretfully, neither for the Jewish community nor the Muslim community, Jewish-Muslim relations in the West is not their priority. It's not in their top five. It's not in their top, look at their budget line, how much money they are spending on, we have to reach out to our Jewish neighbors, Muslim neighbors. And therefore, like Mark said, even if there are those voices clearly discussing, you don't see it because there is no connecting tissue. There is no affinity. These are not part of your network. These are not part of your sources of information. So even the existing efforts and voices unfortunately get lost because these communities are not in conversation with. Because of the toxic, polarizing effect of Israeli-Palestinian conflict, we don't discuss this conflict as fellow British citizens who happen to have political disagreements, or fellow American citizens happen to be Jewish and Muslim talking about the Middle Eastern problem. We talk and fight about this as proxy soldiers, extension of the Middle East. We are in this camp and that camp. And regretfully, without building some ethical, moral, communal, educational connecting tissues, where we put more or less majority pro-Palestinian Muslims of the West and more or less pro-Israel, I hate these terms, but for the lack of a better term, in conversation with a connecting, overarching connection to their citizenship in the West, as patriotic citizens of those respected countries, discussing this issue as fellow citizens, not as opposing teams, we will not get out of this. These labels and these terminology is only going to further fall us apart. What I really want to repeat, what I said earlier, this is not a call for up in the arms about extremism and terrorism, or terrorist networks are taking over Islam. There is such a threat that needs to be taken seriously. Those evil people like Hamas, Hezbollah, ISIS, they exist and they are doing evil things in the name of Islam. Our law enforcement should go after. But here, our primary concern should be why the overall majority who are not connected to these evil terrorist Islamic networks are incapable, unable to marginalize and silence the vile anti-Semitic discourse in their communities. That's what we should go after. And if I may, for another 30 seconds, anti-Semitism is on the rise in an unacceptable level in Muslim communities, both in UK and the United States. There is no denying of it. I am sick and tired of Muslim fragility and defensiveness and denial. It is there. Much of the conspiracy theories this Malik guy believed is a mainstream joke on a dinner table or a side mosque conversation. Anybody who says they haven't heard what this guy believed is a complete liar. But like every form of hate, there are two main components. One of them, quote unquote, is innocent. Really, majority of the people, they don't know better. They don't know enough. They have never had experience with the Jewish community. So majority of the problem could be really resolved with a little bit of education, a little bit of exposure, a little bit of putting an honest moral mirror before them. Why these are not just innocent jokes? Why we can't say this? How do you feel about it when Jews make similar jokes about Islam and Muslims? And in what way you are repeating many Muslims without even reading a one page from Protocols of the Elders of Zion? They haven't read it, but they internalized it already because it's in the ecological space of the Muslim communities, and they are repeating and parroting this vile hatred. So the majority could be dealt with some really healthy communal relationship building, patient trust building efforts. But this has to be a priority for the Muslim community as well as for the Jewish community. This can't be just a ceremonial, fluffy, kumbaya, interfaith effort. Every once in a while, we come together and talk about kosher chicken and halal chicken. This is not going to work. All the interfaith efforts, or most of them, are toothless. I want to be respectful for those efforts and its integrity, but it's not preventing the hate in the Muslim community, neither in the Jewish community. But the second component to this hate, there is a small, it is true for all forms of hate, highly mobilized, ideologically poisoned and driven partisan network of anti-Semites within the Muslim community. There are people, they are not innocent. They are not just watching Palestinians suffering and inevitably not knowing what is criticizing the policies of the state of Israel and what is anti-Semitism. We can deal with this with some communal work, but there is an incredibly evil, organized, intentional and deliberate anti-Semitic violent network of people who are in minority but doing incredible amount of damage. Those people require much harsher, much greater investment and effort, because these people are committed. This is their personal and professional calling to make, this is their business to be in the trade of anti-Semitism and popularizing anti-Semitism. So there are two different approaches and strategies I'm suggesting here.
Thank you. A powerful final contribution to this podcast and a discussion that demands further debate on this platform. But that is it for this week's edition of the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit www.gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to thank our guests, Mark Gardner, Imam Abdullah Antepli, and Raymond Simonson, and our studio chief, Leo Mindell, our fabulous producer, Adam Bradley, for his work on post-production, Justin Cohen for producing this week's show, and you, dear listener, for tuning in. Please do subscribe in your podcast application. That way you'll be able to hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. And don't forget, you can always find out more information and more stories from the Jewish News at jewishnews.co.uk. From me, Richard Ferrer, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.